This is Vermont Edition. I'm Peter Hirschfeld, in for Jane Lindholm. Last Thursday afternoon, on the hallowed academic grounds of Middlebury College, author and social scientist Charles Murray was scheduled to deliver a talk. Murray is best known for his 1994 book called The Bell Curve, and in it, he argues, among other things, that Black and Latino Americans earn less on average because, on the whole, they're not as intelligent as white people. Many Middlebury students lobbied the school administration to cancel Murray's talk, saying a sanctioned presentation on their campus would legitimize his controversial views on race. When those efforts failed, they vowed to take matters into their own hands. And as Murray took the stage at the McCullough Student Center, after an introduction from Middlebury President Lori Patton, dozens of students rose in unison, turned their backs to Murray, and began to chant.
What?
The students shouted down Murray for more than 20 minutes, then did their best to disrupt a live stream of Murray's talk from a remote location elsewhere on the campus. Later, a group of protesters physically confronted Murray and other college officials as they attempted to depart the campus. Some of those protesters allegedly assaulted and injured a Middlebury professor in the process. The episode has become a flashpoint in the national debate over the role of colleges and universities in fostering free speech, and it's spawning new questions about the state of civil discourse in a time of extreme political divides. Do protests like the one at Middlebury last week threaten the democratic ideals this country was founded on? Or was it a justified response to a speaker who's been designated as a white nationalist by the Southern Poverty Law Center? We have four people from Middlebury here today to help us answer these questions and others. From the faculty, Matt Dickinson is here. He's a professor of political science. We're also joined by Linus Owens, who teaches sociology. Two Middlebury seniors also join us. Alexander Kahn studies political science and economics and is vice president of Middlebury's American Enterprise Institute Club, which invited Murray to speak. Elizabeth Siwon Lee studies philosophy and took part in some of the protests of Murray's lecture. Thanks all for being here.
Glad to be with you.
Thank you very much.
Happy to be here.
Alexander Kahn, you were one of two members of the American Enterprise Institute Club to introduce Charles Murray last Thursday. We're going to get to your reasons for issuing that invitation in a moment. But before you do, I want you to take us back to last Thursday. It is clear from watching video of that event that the audience was not a hospitable one even before you introduced Murray. Did you have a sense of what was going to unfold after you welcomed Charles Murray to the stage?
Well, before the event actually took place, a number of the members of the American Enterprise Institute Club actually took the time for about a week before to talk with a lot of the protesters and attend some of the meetings. We also had extensive meetings with the administration just to kind of get a sense of what was being planned and what was going on. We knew that there would be protests outside, and we actually welcomed those protests outside because that, to us, was a valid form of free speech. We knew that there would also be some type of action that took place inside the actual lecture hall, though details on what those actions would be were a little fuzzy. But so we had some sense, but on the day when we saw what actually happened, we were shocked by the scale.
Alexander, in your introductory speech, you told your fellow students that this talk represents, and I'm going to quote you here, an opportunity to grow, to question, and to seek the truth. I want you to talk about what Charles Murray brought to the table specifically that you believed offered those opportunities.
Well, the talk and the reason why we selected Dr. Murray is was based on his book, Coming Apart, which discusses the state of white America right now and how differences in wealth have, in a sense, created new forms of classes within white workers and also white elites in America. They have different viewpoints, different outlooks, and we thought that and his general thesis explained a lot of what happened with the 2016 election, particularly the election of President Trump. And so that's what we had initially asked him to come and speak about. And we thought that was important and an important thesis to hear for people who still today are questioning and asking themselves, you know, how did this happen? How did we get a President Trump when, you know, even up to the day, people thought that Hillary Clinton would become president. So we thought that that was interesting, we thought it was prescient, and we thought that it needed to be discussed and rigorously debated. So that's why we initially brought Dr. Murray to campus.
Elizabeth Siwon Lee, you've been critical of the college's decision to host Charles Murray. Was the problem, in your view, with the fact that Charles Murray was invited to the campus at all, or was it with the format in which the discussion was to take place?
I don't think that Charles Murray should have been invited to the campus to discuss issues about white America, but that's beside the point. I think that he definitely did have the right to come, and the AEI definitely had the right to invite him over. I do take issue with, however, with the fact that the political science department did decide to co-sponsor him and legitimize him as legitimate political science, which is contrary to what his actual views are, because he's had a lot of dubious academic material that's been called racist pseudoscience by many academics. So I think that part is something that I really take issue with. And the fact that the college did not provide a platform for individuals of color to debate him on an equal playing field.
Matt Dickinson, you're a member of the political science department at Middlebury College that did co-sponsor the lecture. Elizabeth isn't the only student to have taken issue with that. Why did it decide to do so?
When AEI came to us and asked for sponsorship, I took the request to the chair, Bert Johnson of the Political Science Department, and we thought it appropriate to sponsor this not because we endorsed the speaker or we were legitimizing his views, but because he was a political scientist talking about a political science topic. And as Alexander explained, we thought it might be of interest to some students. And as Professor Johnson has tried to explain, when you sponsor something, you're not endorsing its views. You're not legitimizing its views. You're saying it's a topic of interest that we think our students should have the opportunity to question the presenter about his views and the evidence he brings to bear and develop the types of skills that we think are really important for them to become functioning citizens in society at large, where they're going to face larger issues of racism and bias based on gender and ethnicity. And the question is, from our perspective, how do you equip them to handle that? Do you tell them the proper response is to cover your eyes and cover your ears and say, nah, 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 I'm not going to believe what you say? Or are we going to give you the tools and the analytical ability to question it? And that's what our sponsorship, not endorsement, implies, that this is a topic of interest. We think some students will want to take this guy on and press him on his points.
Is there a line, Professor Dickinson, that you do not think Middlebury should cross when it comes to inviting guest lecturers to speak? If a group of students wanted David Duke to come talk, for instance, or conservative provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos, would the department sponsor them as well?
If a political scientist who had extreme views or an outsider like Sean King or somebody who talked about a political science or politics-related issue came to us and asked for endorsement, I would be very reluctant, if there was enough students who expressed an interest in this, to substitute my judgment for theirs. I would do what I did with Charles Murray, which is prep my students so that they understood why most people don't accept this person's arguments and give them the opportunity to rebut those arguments face to face.
So you would accept all comers?
You know, when we started this debate, I was trying to think what I would where I would draw the line. And increasingly, as I hear efforts to censor speech based on this or that, I'm moving more and more to an absolutist free speech doctrine.
We are talking today about the protests at Middlebury in response to controversial speaker Charles Murray and the debate it's been raising over questions of speech and education across the country. We've already gotten a number of comments from listeners. Alpha 16 has posted, "Colleges claim to be the center of learning and discourse in America, and yet it seems that when anyone holds an opinion that does not meet the politically correct stance of the left, it is unacceptable to allow it to be heard. In too many instances, these demonstrations turn violent, and the violence upstages the ideas of the presenter." Nat in Underhill takes a different view of this. He says, "With ongoing racist attacks, burning mosques, and desecrated cemeteries in this country, it would have been appalling if the students had sat politely to, quote, debate a speaker declared a white nationalist by the Southern Poverty Law Center. This is not to condone any violence, but good on them for seeing him off." Linus Owens, in a piece that you published on Medium.com this week, you regret the allegedly violent actions perpetrated by some of the protesters last Thursday. However, you say that the, quote, real violence was in bringing, I'm going to use your words again here, a known and active racist into our community. freedom of speech has been embraced in this country in part because it's so preferable to a violent resolution of our differences. In what ways does Murray's speech alone, as you posit, constitute a violent action against some of the students at Middlebury?
Well, I think that to some extent, the idea is that his general ideas expressed in The Bell Curve, but also in his other works, is basically that African-American students and Latino students on average have lower IQs. And so bringing in someone who is known, and has been known since before these students were even born, as a provocative, racist pseudoscientist, feels like not an opportunity to have a conversation about hard issues, but rather I feel like a slap in the face, because I do think there are standards, and I respect Professor Dickinson, Matt, in his sort of absolutist position, but I find some problems with it. I mean, first, I'm not comfortable with equating Sean King and Charles Murray, but I want to move on from that and think about the fact that that students actually, and students have come to me, and faculty have come to me, and feel that they feel less safe on this campus now. They feel that it's not so much just that he was invited, but that the president agreed to introduce him, and that the political science department co-sponsored it. And again, I respect Matt's position that it was not intended as an endorsement, but it was experienced as an endorsement. And when that experience of endorsement was made clear to the political science department, when it was made clear to the president, they decided that they were not going to compromise. They were not going to recognize that people were experiencing it in this way. And they stuck with their principles. And that's admirable on some level. But I do feel like, there's an escalation going on both sides. And the students escalated it certainly, and it escalated to a level that I'm definitely uncomfortable with. But I saw escalation happening on all sides, and any point in which we could have, quote unquote, compromised, no one took that opportunity.
Don't we begin to go down a very dangerous road, Professor Owens, when we decide we need to somehow regulate who gets to talk and who doesn't?
Well, sure. But the thing is, we're fooling ourselves if we don't think that we already make those choices on Middlebury's campus. For one thing, you can't bring in a speaker if you can't afford to bring them in. And so the fact that certain departments have certain resources to bring in certain numbers of the speakers, it's already being regulated. That's not based on content, of course. But on the other hand, we talk about how the students are apparently the attacking free speech on all levels. But I think we want to make it clear that free speech is already regulated on Middlebury's campus. Before the events happened, a reminder was sent out to say that there's a proper way to protest. I don't want to conflate free speech with civil discourse. Those are two different things. And I'll quit talking in a second, but 2 years ago or a year and a half ago with Halloween, Halloween was this little, was another one of the free speech instances. And it happened on Middlebury's campus too. There was a note going out that said, "Don't dress up in racist Halloween costumes." And so if Middlebury can tell its students not to dress up in racist Halloween costumes, then why can't they tell Charles Murray not to come and be a racist on campus? It seems like, there's already these concessions being made on our campus right now. And so I don't think we should act like this is new.
Alexander Kahn, what responsibility does a club like yours have in making sure that members of the student body don't feel threatened by a speaker like this? And does that responsibility as a member of the community possibly include deciding that maybe he isn't the right guy to be there if it is, as Linus says, going to make members of the student body feel unsafe?
Well, when we decided to bring Dr. Murray, our goal was in no way to purposefully create controversy or to make certain groups of students feel threatened. And we do recognize that, those feelings are valid for students who might have felt attacked by Dr. Murray's presence. But as a club like AEI, especially how it is run on this campus, which is in a completely nonpartisan way, it's completely open to the debate and the discussion of ideas, I think that we, in a sense, have a duty to ask all the questions that people are interested in asking and looking at. We have a duty not only as students, but in a sense as citizens who value these ideals that we have as Americans of free speech, of civil discourse, generally of being citizens of a democratic republic. I think we have a duty to ask questions. We have a duty to raise our concerns with philosophies or theories that we might have problems or take issue with. And so I recognize that what we have done by bringing Charles Murray to campus might have made some students feel uncomfortable, but in my opinion, the best way to solve those issues are by expressing yourself and by taking the opportunity to prove the falsity or the non-truth of opinions one doesn't agree with.
We're talking today about the protests at Middlebury College in response to controversial speaker Charles Murray and the debate it's been raising over questions of speech and education across the country. I'm Pete Hirschfeld. This is Vermont Edition.
Hey, podcast listeners. This month, we're asking you to help us spread the word about great podcasts. So think of someone in your life and tell them about a podcast you think they'll love. If they don't know how to listen to podcasts, offer to show them. And then tell us what show you recommended, because we want new podcasts too. You can use the hashtag TryPod. That's T-R-Y pod. I know, very clever. And thanks for spreading the word.
I'm Peter Hirschfeld, and this is Vermont Edition. Today, we're talking about a big national debate over what happened at Middlebury College last week when protesters shouted down controversial speaker Charles Murray. It's got people talking about free speech, protest, and who gets to decide what viewpoints are acceptable. We're joined today by Middlebury professors Matt Dickinson and Linus Owens, and by Middlebury seniors Alexander Kahn and Elizabeth Siwon Lee. We have Paula calling in from Enosburg Falls. Paula, what do you think?
Hi. I have a sort of a question. The trouble I had with Charles Murray was that he was being given a platform at a university, college, whatever, as a scientist, when actually he's widely regarded as being a pseudoscientist and using statistics in a misleading way and citing racist scientists in his work. So I kind of feel like that platform as a academically appropriate person is kind of misleading. And then a related comment is a lot of people seem to be quite hypocritical when they object about squelching free speech. They do it in situations like Milo Yiannopoulos going to Berkeley and being shut down, but when CPAC invited him and then disinvited him, no one accused CPAC of squelching free speech. So those are just a question and observations. Thanks.
Thanks, Paula. Brad and Stowe also has something to say. Brad, what's on your mind?
Yeah, hi. I just want to say that I also agree that absolute freedom of speech is critical to our society. I mean, if you look at that, there could be a cold civil war, quote unquote, brewing in this country. The only way to mitigate that is through absolute freedom of expression. And among other things, who decides who's going to be able to view their or make their point of view known? Who is going to decide if what I say will threaten somebody's safe space or not? There was a movie that came out 20 years ago called Larry Flynn, the founder of Hustler magazine. I went to see the movie. I despised the movie, but I got why it was important for him to have the ability to publish that magazine. Because if you take that away, then it's a very slippery slope. And I'm afraid we're already sliding down that slope.
Brad, thank you for the call. As both of these callers point out, the issues we're discussing are not unique to Middlebury College. Last month, the University of California, Berkeley, canceled an appearance by right-wing commentator Milo Yiannopoulos after protesters staged violent demonstrations in advance of his talk. Elizabeth Siwon Lee, colleges and universities have long served as bastions of free speech and open discourse. Do we as a society run the risk of losing their contributions to that public discourse when we allow a small but intense opposition to thwart talks from people they happen to disagree with?
First of all, I don't think that the opposition was small. They certainly were intense, but it was a lot of the students who disagreed with his views and did not think that his views were going to be productive if projected on a stage for 30 minutes at a time. I think that when the colleges talk about the bastions of free speech, I absolutely agree with this. And I think that this is not a question about whether he was allowed to speak or not, because he was still could have spoken. He just didn't speak the way he necessarily wanted to speak. But I think when it comes to academic learning and discourse, what could have happened is that we could have had somebody who was a person of color who was impacted by the words that he says and to actually debate him on an equal playing field. And I think that that's what the protesters really wanted, to see their voices being channeled through legitimate channels to challenge him in a meaningful way. I think Mr. Murray in the past has really like locked down a lot of the debate and like shut down a lot of the questions that have been asked to him. And so given this history, I think that protesters were legitimate in thinking that their questions were going to be shut down again and that they need to take other sorts of actions.
Matt Dickinson, you hear Elizabeth saying, look, I don't think Charles Murray should have been there in the first place, but if he is, then it sure shouldn't have been under the format that it was allowed to happen. Does she have a point? Should Middlebury have constructed this dialogue in a way that was going to allow for more back and forth, a more free flow of ideas, or perhaps even putting somebody else on the stage with Charles Murray who could offer an opposing viewpoint from the same platform?
So I appreciate Elizabeth's concern, and this is one that has been raised by many people. I will say, one, our decision as a political science department to empower a student group, in this case AEI, was on the assumption that they decided what they wanted. And if they thought we should give Murray an opportunity to discuss this new work, with which a lot of people were not familiar, the Coming Apart work, we should at least give him time to lay that out, and then equal time for people to critique him. Second, there was a moderator up there, my colleague Allison Stanger, who we had sent questions to, designed to sort of push him on some of his claims. So there was some critique. Third, I spent an hour in the week before prepping my students on some of his prior research. They used that research to put together a pamphlet critiquing that research, which they distributed to every seat in the auditorium. That research and the critique never got a chance to get explained. Fourth, we highly anticipated that after his presentation, we would go back to our classrooms. We might even host another panel where his views would be critiqued. So I'm in complete agreement with Elizabeth. I think where she and I may part company is, you know, we have rules governing speech and how to demonstrate against them, and I encourage my students to demonstrate against him. But you cannot do so in a way that shuts down another person's ability who may want to hear what he has to say, and that's what happened.
Professor Owens, I've seen a number of people on social media referencing a quote from the famed linguist and philosopher Noam Chomsky when they're trying to make their argument on Facebook or Twitter. Chomsky said, quote, Goebbels was in favor of free speech for views he liked. So was Stalin. If you're really in favor of free speech, then you're in favor of freedom of speech for precisely the views you despise. Otherwise, you're not in favor of free speech. Professor, isn't our ability to speak freely ourselves bound by the ability of others to do the same, no matter how intensely we oppose those views?
Sure. I guess I would want to push back on a few things, including a comment made from the gentleman from Stowe that aligns partly with your point, which is that Middlebury College, as powerful as we'd like to imagine it to be, is not the federal government. That, you know, and like it, we are, whatever the students were doing, they were saying, Charles Murray, we don't want you to talk on our campus. They were not trying, they were not burning his books. They were not denying him access to any other forum. In fact, right, you know, people say that they made a huge mistake because now his book sales are increasing. And so to some extent, they did a bad thing because his speech is spreading more. But I don't think that's their responsibility. They wanted to stop him from this campus. And like when we talk about who wins and who loses, I think it's a longer term issue, which is, you know, is Middlebury going to become whiter and less tolerant over time? But I think that, you know, going back to your point that, yes, Stalin, Hitler, I mean, you know, and now we could talk about Donald Trump or we could talk about Barack Obama or whoever, right? Leaders of states squelching speech is totally different than students saying, not on our campus. I just think that the fact that we're equating them is really unfair. And the last point, and I agree with Elizabeth on this, twofold. One is that just because you're allowed to speak doesn't guarantee you an audience. It doesn't guarantee silence. It doesn't guarantee any of those things. And so Mr. Murray was allowed to speak. People can speak during him. I mean, I go to movies and people talk during those movies, and it's not a First Amendment issue. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, people don't have to sit quietly in the audience. We have rules at Middlebury, but you know, again, people don't follow them. People, you know, talk during my class, and I don't sort of call them out for free speech issues. And I do agree with Elizabeth that the structure, you know, like, was the problem. Matt is totally right that there were decisions that were made to accommodate some of the students' concerns, but I didn't think they went nearly far enough, because at the end of the day, the structure was still that he was the center. People were responding to him. There was no one placed up there as an equal, you know, in a way that, especially after he was here 10 years ago, these same problems came up. There was actually a discussion on campus about how to deal with controversial speakers that, of course, you know, institutional memories fade. But it was exactly about, like, when people come, we should not give them, like, a straight lecture format. And maybe we'll do it next time. But I do think that the structures matter, and that should have been part of the decision-making process. I mean, part of the stress of this is that we found out about this a week before it happened. And a lot of people had to kick into overdrive to make decisions. You know, normally talks are longer in the making. This happened very quickly, and so people maybe didn't make the decisions that they wanted to. You know, I can't speak for the other sides. But there was a big rush. But I do think there are mistakes made with the structure.
We're talking today about a big national debate over what happened at Middlebury College last week when protesters shouted down controversial speaker Charles Murray. We have a lot of listener interest in this topic. John, calling from Lincoln. John, what do you make of all this?
Sure. Thanks for having me. My main thought when it comes down to these protests that have been coming up is that freedom of speech and freedom to have a platform are two different things, and we don't have freedom to have a platform. I personally believe that Charles Murray's views are backwards, outdated, and very dangerous in today's climate, and in no way do we need to accommodate him with a stage and a microphone. He could have easily shared his freedom of speech by talking from the sidewalk at people, and nobody would have stopped him. But once again, we don't have to give people like this a platform to further their backwards rhetoric and their backwards concepts, which feed into white supremacy and hatred, which we're clearly having a major problem with in our country. So I fully support the protesters and all protesters that share their freedom of speech by protesting these events. And I hope that they continue to not go on, because frankly, his message is not one that will further our country or our species in any way. So I find that I'm in full support of the protesters.
Thanks for the call, John. We also have Nathan on the line. Nathan is from Greenfield, New York. What do you have to add, Nathan?
It was interesting listening to the previous caller. I'm actually share a bit of optimism. I think that I'm in full support of the college for accepting the speaker and sponsoring him, but I'm also full support of the students who protested and used their First Amendment rights to do so. And what I think it speaks to is actually something in this country that's very healthy right now, and that's the Constitution in action. And there is a big political divide in this country. Nobody can deny that right now, but we're openly talking about it. We're openly protesting it. And in most cases, it's not violent. So I actually think that speaks to a very healthy democratic society.
Thanks for the call, Nathan. Alexander Kahn, many people, likely including many at Middlebury, are concerned with what they see as racist undertones of language and policy coming out of the White House under the current administration. Does that change how somebody like Charles Murray should be received at institutions like Middlebury College?
I definitely think that it changed the reaction on campus. I think that a lot of the anger that was directed towards Charles Murray might have been, in a sense, misplaced. It might have come from or stemmed from the greater political climate. But I don't think that that changes whether or not we should bring Dr. Murray to campus. I agree with a lot of what's been said, but I think that there is a distinction and a difference between rights, which is an important part of this issue, but also, in a sense, duties, and duties as citizens, as students. And so when you have calls for things like putting Dr. Murray on a panel where he can be on equal footing with somebody who might have an opposing viewpoint, it seems that that only applies to speakers who you disagree with. That only applies to those people who you take issue with. You know, while some people have an issue with equating Charles Murray and somebody like Sean King, why weren't there calls to place Sean King on a panel with somebody who disagreed with him? So that's the first thing I have to say. And I also agree with the caller who said that you don't have to you don't have to give people a platform to speak. But if you don't give people a platform to speak who you disagree with, then you end up having a situation in which groups of people separate and they create bubbles for themselves or echo chambers that they live in, and they never can learn, they never can grow. They also start to see the other side as not only wrong but in a lot of senses evil. I've heard that term thrown around in reference to Charles Murray, in reference even to the AEI club on campus, which is quite shocking to me. So I think you have a separation that can only do harm for this country. I think it's difficult to make claims that you should have everybody on a panel or nobody on a panel. I think we did a good job of including Professor Stanger, and actually the Q&A that we planned was double the time of the proposed speech so that students would have the opportunity to refute his claims.
Professor Owens, you want to jump in here?
Yes. I think that, again, even though Alexander had his, disclaimer, I still think it's problematic to equate Sean King with Charles Murray. And part of what I'm waiting for is to find an equivalent on the quote-unquote left that would be likely to be invited to campus. People keep struggling. And actually, I find it problematic that often the examples are from Black Lives Matter protesters. Secondly, I do think that, again, if we move beyond, and again, not everyone accepts this, including Matt here with me, beyond an absolutist level, then I think we can make distinctions. And like, not everyone has to have a panel, but there are speakers who we know are controversial, and controversial not just because they have, ideas that people don't believe in. I think racism and sort of IQ pseudoscience is, a category that's not the same kind of debate as, other big academic questions. I mean, in some ways, as a sociologist, I recognize that these debates are never fully done, that, the science is always embedded within political and other social struggles. But I think that as an institution that we should be able to recognize distinctions and follow from that. And I'm just concerned about this language of that everything can be a conversation, that everything is about abstract ideas. But I think that not everyone on this campus experiences it the same way. And I think when we talk about bubbles and we talk about diversity, I think the real bubbles that we need to pop are this kind of over-intellectualized understanding of what these ideas mean and how they affect the students and faculty and staff on our campus. I've talked to people who are like, don't want to come back. And, it'll pass, maybe. But, and whether or not people are evil because of that, I think it's something that we have to take seriously and not dismiss through the language of snowflakes and safe spaces and all this kind of stuff. Because, these people actually don't experience Middlebury as a safe space. And I think bringing Charles Murray says, hey, you know what? We don't care.
I want to read a comment that was posted on our website by Melanie. Her son is a junior at Middlebury. She says she and him were discussing the Murray situation via text as it was unfolding. He was disgusted that his fellow students wouldn't allow Murray to speak. She says she mom-splained to him that although freedom of expression is always the goal, Murray presented a special case. She says he is a racist who uses a cloak of academic respectability to hide his shoddy scholarship. He should never have been invited, and the students were right to protest him. I now realize my son was right and I was wrong. The student should have heard him out and challenged him in the Q&A. The reason would have prevailed against his pseudoscience. And when they got unruly, violent, and disrespectful, they lost the moral high ground. What a shame, given that a loathsome character like Murray comes out ahead in the public relations battle. Here we have a stark example of two people having a conversation about what happened on Thursday, changing their viewpoints to some extent as a result. And I want to ask each of you, has the ensuing debates over the events of last Thursday changed your views on this issue? Have any of you read an editorial, had a conversation with someone from an opposing viewpoint that's caused you to rethink your position on this matter? We only have about 20 seconds for each of you, but Elizabeth, please start us off.
Right. I think that it's very important to bring different views, and having these conversations has definitely opened my eyes to some fundamental assumptions that are not shared by all the college community. And I think by sharing those assumptions, we're better able to understand it. But I don't think that my views have necessarily changed throughout my conversations, but I think that I've better articulated my views in the process.
What about you, Alexander? Are you able to see the other side's point of view in a richer way, or actually change your own views in the process of hashing this out over the past week?
Well, I've had a number of discussions with friends of mine who actually were on the other side, who organized parts of the protest, and you know, I recognize their issues with what happened, but what's actually interesting to me is a lot of them have said that while we disagree with Charles Murray, there's something wrong with the culture on this campus, and that's something that has shocked me. You know, we really have a culture problem in that we need to cultivate a culture of the competition of ideas and of intellectual diversity, and that's something that people are coming to more and more agree on. And that's really what has come out of my conversations with people on the other side.
Matt Dickinson, quickly.
I would say two things. One, I'm tremendously proud of these two students who are on the opposite sides of the issues and yet engaging it in a way precisely what I think should characterize debate on Middlebury. Second, just the utmost respect I have for Linus in doing the same thing. And I think he's quite right to point out that people reacted to this talk differently. And we have to be sensitive to the impact on people's feelings, not just in an intellectual sense, but their feeling of place here on campus.
And very briefly, sorry, Professor Owens.
That's fine. I just want to respond quickly and say that we shouldn't conflate intellectual diversity with other kinds of demographic diversity. And the best way to guarantee intellectual diversity is to encourage and expand the demographic diversity of the Middlebury campus, and that inviting people like Charles Murray is the worst way to do that. Thank you.
Matt Dickinson teaches political science at Middlebury, and Linus Owens teaches sociology. Alexander Kahn and Elizabeth Siwon Lee are Middlebury seniors. Thank you all for joining us today. We're really grateful.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for having us.
Coming up, we'll talk with the director of a competition that's a Vermont version of Shark Tank for local entrepreneurs. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. This is Vermont Edition. This is Vermont Edition. I'm Peter Hirschfeld, in for Jane Lindholm. You've seen TV shows like Shark Tank and Dragon's Den, where business owners appear before a panel of wealthy investors to pitch an idea and sell a share of the company to one of the celebrity backers. Well, you might not have heard of it yet, but Vermont has a similar competition. The stakes are a little lower, but you don't have to give up any equity in your idea, and you can get mentoring help from Vermont business people who already know what it takes to succeed. The competition is called Launch VT, and it's put on by the Champlain Regional Chamber of Commerce. Here to provide some details about what it is is the executive director of Launch VT, Katie Taylor. Katie, welcome to Vermont Edition.
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great to have you. Katie, the deadline to apply is tomorrow. What kind of information will a company need to provide?
So we have an application through Design Book, which is also a local Vermont company, and people will need to provide information about the team of founders that they are working with, things like what their market is for their company, what type of competition there is, what their financials are, have they been in business already and made money? If not, what is their plan for the future in terms of revenue? And then they put this all into a pitch deck, which is used in the entrepreneurial world when you present your investment to or present your business to investors, you can either do that in person where you have a pitch deck and you use that to go along with your verbal presentation, or you can just send it along, which is what they're doing for this application. And the judges will look at it to see if they make the cut to be one of the finalists.
This isn't the first time you've done this. This is the fifth year of the competition. In your experience so far, what kinds of companies are the best fit for a competition like this? And at what stage in their development does this kind of potential partnership make sense?
Companies are best suited for LaunchVT if they're early in their development and looking to scale up really quickly. So our winner last year, OG, is a luxury organic skincare company. They had just started. They hadn't actually launched their product, but they did have product and a full plan in place. And they're looking to expand, you know, huge over the next 5 or 6 years to become a massive household brand name. And then we have companies like Sap Maple Water, which you might have seen in the grocery store. They had launched already, but were ready to do some expansions and hadn't quite gained the traction that they wanted to, and LaunchVT was a way for them to get some mentoring and coaching and go through that process and get more eyes on their product. So both kind of early stages and looking to grow really quickly.
So give us a where are they now story from a finalist or two from when this competition in years past.
Sure. So last year, we have a first prize and a second prize innovation award. And last year, that second prize innovation award went to Wheelpad, which is a company out of Wilmington. They did not have a prototype yet, but what they make is a temporary, accessible, eco-friendly housing unit. It's a single bedroom and bathroom that can be placed next to an existing home for someone who is going through rehabilitation. Perhaps they were in a car accident or they are a wounded veteran coming back home and they need 9 months of accessible living, but they don't want to go live in a hotel and they don't want to totally reform their house because they're not going to need it long term. They can lease one of these units, put it up to the side of their house, so that they can continue living with their family during this rehabilitation time. They didn't have a prototype yet, but they do now. They've been traveling all across the country going to conventions. They recently got an award from an architectural society about their work and are just doing an amazing job and did a little competition to have a family in southern Vermont apply to get that first prototype if they need it. It's been really great for them.
Yeah, it sounds cool. This is a competition, of course, which I assume means prizes. What do the winners receive?
So the first place winner receives $30,000 cash. As you said before, there's no equity in that. We just give it straight to them for them to do as they wish with their business. And then they get about $45,000 of in-kind services like legal services, accounting services, marketing, that kind of thing. And then the second place innovation prize gets $15,000 and about $25,000 in those in-kind services. And all the finalists get coaching and mentoring during the process, about 6 to 8 weeks leading up to the competition.
Pretty impressive prizes there. And I imagine there's some people who might want to figure out how they can compete for those. But for somebody who doesn't feel like they're ready for this year's LaunchVT, but wants to forge their own path in the world of business, how can they set themselves up for success in this event next year or the year after that?
Well, everybody should go to www.launchvt.com if they're interested. That's where they can find out more information. And we have educational events throughout the year to have to provide opportunities for people to hear from entrepreneurs. And we have meetups throughout the years, and that information is on our website. So if you're not ready to do it this year, get involved. Start coming to our educational events and meetups so that you'll be prepared next year.
And how many companies do you expect signing up this year?
In the application process, we're looking at probably 30 to 50 applying for LaunchVT this year.
Wow. Well, it sounds like a really exciting competition, Katie. Katie Taylor is Executive Director of LaunchVT. Katie, thanks so much for joining us.
Thanks so much, Peter.
And that's Vermont Edition for today. Join us tomorrow when we'll look at racial discrimination faced by people of color in Vermont and how some state lawmakers are working to address it. That's tomorrow, live at noon on Vermont Edition. Vermont Edition is produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gale Rosen, and Meg Malone. Jake Rusnak directed the program, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. I'm Peter Hirschfeld. Thanks for listening.